I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Hello everyone, and welcome to minute 75 of season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Richard Durham of Akira Minute. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Are you in the nest?
No, that's just my cat.
Okay. That's fair. All right. So minute 75 begins with George wondering why Mary would actually want to be with him, and ends with Mary doing home improvements.
Yeah.
So, you know, all week we've been spending time in Potter's office, and yesterday we finally spent a day in the dilapidated home of George and Mary that is just filled with love. I think that's what keeps them going. You don't need anything else there for them. That's what they, you know, what's the phrase? All you need is love. So that seems to work for them. You know, he sort of woke her up. Do you think she was sleeping, or do you think she was just, you know, fake sleeping?
I think she was probably dozing on and off.
Because he wasn't making any noise. The only noise that was happening was were the thoughts reverberating in his brain. You know, and I mean, they might have some sort of neural connection, but I don't think it would be loud enough to have woken Mary up.
No.
You know, that would be my guess.
Yeah, I think she was kind of like I said, kind of light sleep, kind of in the early stages, dozing, kind of dimly aware of what was going on.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. And
I mean, like you mentioned, that she had the window, you know, she'd had the shades up, so the room was full of lights. So maybe him walking past the window was enough of a change,
right?
For her to notice.
Sure. That's true. And so we ended things yesterday with George starting to ask her a question by saying, why in the world? And the continuation of that question is today, where he continues and says, did you ever marry a guy like me? And I gotta say, I love her answer. You know, remember, she was just sleeping or dozing or whatever it is, but she's still on the ball and is able to respond and say, well, because I didn't want to become an old maid. So, I mean, it's, you see, I've always had a problem with this movie referring to Mary as an old maid at any point, because she's really not that old. I mean, if George is 27, 28, and we pretty much established earlier in this movie that she is probably Harry's age, so she's 2 years younger, so she's 25 at this point. Okay, so she's concerned that at 25 she would have become an old maid, or if we jump ahead to what goes on later in the movie, you know, so they're in their late 30s by, you know, the end of this movie, where she is quote unquote an old maid, you know,
in Pottersville. Old maid, yeah,
that's right,
yeah,
you know, maybe it has something to do with the time, you know, maybe back in the 1930s and 40s. A woman of that age would be considered an old maid. Today, you know, I think you would think of someone as an old maid if they're probably in their, I don't know, late 60s, early 70s and by themselves. You know, that's what I would say.
Yeah. So this, this exchange here, I didn't want to be an old man. And then he says what?
He says, well, you could have married like Sam. You could have married Sam or anybody else in town. And then she says, I didn't want to marry anybody else in town because I want my baby to look so like
this. This is the key, as we said yesterday, to the entire movie. So I think it was about a year ago, there were a couple of articles about Mary in this movie, because this is like a favorite Christmas movie, and I think a lot of people were thinking, you know, the past few years we've been through the feminist movement, we've been through Me Too, and let's in the general mood of just taking a look at everything, is this movie like fair to the women characters in it? Is it fair to Mary? Is there like, is this a character, a woman character who, you know, is treated fairly? Is she just window dressing? And a lot of the conclusions like that some writers drew was that she is the one with the most agency in the entire movie. She is the one that basically orchestrated George's life. She, mm-hmm.
right, behind the scenes, though. She did it all behind
the scenes. Behind the scenes, yes. She is, but she had the insight and the kind of the emotional intelligence and kind of the skills to manage situations, to kind of steer things into kind of the life that she wanted, right? This mm-hmm. This is not the life that George envisioned for himself, but this is totally the life that Mary envisioned for herself from the beginning. She had a vision of what she wanted and she got it.
Right.
And there's in particular, people were like, it's kind of ridiculous that she would be an old maid, like Donna Reed, like the luminous 1940s Donna Reed would be an old maid, but that would have been her choice, right? And that's sure. The key here that she said, I don't want to, it's not like she has no obligation to marry anybody. And so it's totally her choice that if she can't have George, then she's not interested in anybody else.
Right. I mean, again, anyone who's paid attention to what's going on in this movie, even the first time we meet Mary, she already knows that she wants to spend her life with George.
Yep. Yep.
You know, and she does all that she can by even getting her brother, at the dance to convince George to just have one dance with her. Just to get him out of the way. That type of thing. So, I think you're 100% right. I mean, she is the driving force behind everything that happens here. I mean, come on. We discussed this a few weeks ago. How did she plan, she went and bought the house somehow. Yeah. I don't know where she got the money. The $2,000 that they have, they gave away. And that was all the money they were spending cash. She had money to buy the house. And at least fix it up a little bit in order for them to be, and I doubt she did it on that day. This is something she must have planned beforehand.
And she recruited Bert and Ernie, so she's like enlisting
Bert, Ernie, and another guy.
Did
you notice that there was a third guy there?
Oh, that's right, the guy who was like complaining about the company posters.
That's right, but he doesn't have a name anywhere. So I couldn't find out who the actor is who played him, because even in the script, he's just referred to as third man.
Third man. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a whole other movie.
Basically.
So do we know what company he's talking about?
Nope. Like, no idea.
The company that owns posters?
No idea. The company that owns travel posters and liver pill posters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, the idea of calling her an old maid, I want to go back there a little bit because, you know, do you know where the term comes from, old maid? Or do you know what the official No. term for an unmarried older woman would be?
The official term, I will tell you that, you know, in so my wife had a joke kind of about this because my wife's Japanese, and in Japan the kind of the Christmas and New Year's are kind of switched. Like New Year's is a big family holiday. You gather with your family and kind of eat a special meal and kind of, you know, see the new year. And then Christmas for a long time now has been kind of a date holiday where couples get together and like they eat like Christmas cake and maybe they have Kentucky Fried Chicken or go to Tokyo Disney or something.
Oh, right? Wow. So you've now answered. I'm going to interrupt you for a second because you've now answered a question that I've been asking for four seasons, trying to figure out why the Nakatomi build company would have a party on Christmas Eve and make all of their employees come to work on a Friday or Saturday night. So now I understand why, because they don't care about, for anyone in the Nakatomi hierarchy, you know, that's not what you do on Christmas. You don't have to have a family on Christmas. The family's for a week later. There you go. Thank you, Richard.
Exactly.
I've been waiting four seasons for that answer, and I finally got. I didn't know. I should have turned to you earlier. Yeah.
So the so Christmas cake is a big, right. So your girlfriend Christmas cake and you eat it together. So unmarried women over the age of 25 are referred to as Christmas cake because nobody wants to have it after the 25th.
Interesting.
So I had this joke with my wife. I met her when I met her, she joked, "Oh, well, I'm New Year's Eve cake," because she was in her 30s at that point. Uh-huh. So that's that would be in Japan, that would be considered an old maid.
Oh, wow.
Mary definitely would be considered an old maid in her late 30s.
Okay. That's fair. So, I mean, the official term for an unmarried woman is a spinster.
Official.
Exactly. It's the term that refers to an unmarried woman who is older than what is perceived as the prime age range during which women usually marry. And it can also indicate that the woman is considered unlikely to ever marry. And so a synonymous term of this is old maid for other women. But there's nothing when you talk about men. The closest you get is a bachelor, confirmed bachelor, but that doesn't sound as degrading as calling someone either an old maid or a spinster. You know, so it sounds very archaic to use that term, you know, an old maid or a spinster.
I think the first time I heard this phrase was in relation to the card game. I'm like, why is this?
Okay, we're that was the next thing I was going to talk about.
Because I remember playing the card game, I was like, why is this, what does this card game have to do with, like as a kid, I was like maid made me think of like milkmaid. It's like, why is this card game have to do with like older women who are like milking cows?
Okay, so you see, you knew that that's where I was going to go, apparently. So there is a card game known as Old Maid, which became popular in the 19th century. And it is a card game for at least two people. You can play with more people also. They claim that it possibly came from an ancient European gambling game in which the loser then pays for all the drinks. Okay. There is a book that was published in 1831 in America by Eliza Leslie, which states the rules of the game. And it was called Old Maid if it was played by girls, or Old Bachelor if it was played by boys.
Okay.
Okay, and the you know, as I said, the goal of the game is to find out who actually has to then, who's the loser who has to pay for the next round of drinks, you know, when using it as a drinking game. So you would have a deck of cards, and you would use either, you know, one of the queens. It doesn't matter which one you would use. It could be the diamond, jack, spades, hearts. And the idea is that whoever is left with that card at the end of the game is considered the old maid. Okay, so I mean, I have rules here from 1831. I mean, the game is a little different nowadays than the way it is then. I mean, I remember as a kid playing the game with special cards.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. With like a picture of an old maid. Like,
that's right.
Right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think I had the same cards. Yeah.
Right. And the idea is basically to collect pairs. And after you collect a pair, then you put it down, and you're every time you hold up the cards, and someone picks a card from your fanned cards. And the idea is you want them to pick the old maid so that you don't get stuck with it at the end. Because when you pick a card and then you have a pair, so then you can put the pair down and you no longer are holding that. And then, you know, whoever's left at the end with the card is known as the old maid.
So if you played old bachelor, would you then use like remove one of the kings?
No, you would use one of the jacks. No, you would actually,
one of the jacks.
According to what I read here, you would use one of the jacks. I guess the king is, you know, the king can always be the king can't be a bachelor, I guess. You know, it's
only, I guess. You know, he has to have an heir somehow.
That's right. Exactly. You know, and it doesn't need to be from the queen. You know. So, you know, hey, if that works, why not? I mean, some people play that the Joker. That's considered the old maid card, you know, if you're playing with a regular deck of cards. I mean, at the end, it doesn't matter what card. You can say, okay, whoever has the two of clubs is the old maid. You know, it doesn't really – that's not what affects the way that the game is played. I mean, it's funny how he says you could have married Sam Wainwright. I don't know if you've noticed this, but when we dove into the scene where Sam called and was when I always assumed that he was courting – you know, Mary over the phone, you know, when Mrs. Hatch when she says, oh, Sam Wainwright's going to call. Did you notice
Sam Wainwright's calling from New York tonight?
That's right. Did you notice what Sam is doing while he's talking to her?
He's fending off some young lady like in a fur coat.
That's right.
Jewels and everything.
That's right. Yeah. Which means that Sam Wainwright is not interested in Mary at all. You know, he had some girl on the side in New York, and that's what he was interested in. And then we end up meeting his wife, who was again, you know, someone acting very similar to the woman in New York. I'm trying to remember if it might even be that we met his wife then. Actually, maybe it was someone else. I don't remember. But the idea is that, you know, it's funny that George is still under the illusion that, you know, Sam Wainwright actually wanted to marry Mary.
Well, he did say, what are you doing? I'm stealing my girl? I mean...
And he says, what are you doing stealing?
I don't think he would have been a faithful head.
But he's, but again, he says that line and he's holding hands with this woman, you know, behind him. So yeah. George, I mean, could have perceived it. It's possible that George perceived it as truth. I mean, it wasn't a video conference call. You know, they weren't on Zoom where hey, who's that woman behind you over there? No. So, I mean... Again, anyone paying attention knows that Sam really wasn't interested in Mary, but George doesn't know that, which is fine. You know, it's fine for George to bring that up because of that.
I think Sam was still interested, but he wasn't going to be crushed. He had other options, and he probably would have fooled around.
But he called.
Mary anyway.
But he was calling to get the two of them in on the ground floor of his bean factory. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, he's kind of happy-go-lucky. Hey, in terms of romance, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. And so then Mary basically says to him, "Well, I don't want to marry anybody else in town. I want my baby to look like you." And George continues and says, "You didn't even have a honeymoon. I promised you." And then, you slowly see recognition in his face as to what was just said. He was like, "Whoa, wait a second. Rewind a second. What did you just say?"
Would you have interpreted that as, "Oh, you're telling me you're pregnant?" Because I would have just said, "Oh, some future baby."
That's right.
I would have been totally oblivious
That's
to
right.
that.
Yeah, me too, for sure. I mean, it's a very strange way to say it that way. But she like smiles at him as she says it. So maybe that's sort of the hint.
Yeah.
I don't know. Not really sure. But again, it's an effective way to tell your husband that you're pregnant.
Yes, if he's
Back in
maybe,
1934.
yeah.
And then and I like the fact that before even before the recognition really seeps in, he was telling her that he promised that he would take her on a honeymoon at some point and just never got around to it after everything that happened on the run of the bank and stuff like that. And then he goes, "You're what?" And she goes, "My baby." And he looks at her and goes, "You're Mary. You on the nest." And are you familiar with that term? Besides in this movie, I now know I need to ask you that.
On the nest? I mean, it's, yeah, I guess. I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory, is it not? It refers to,
To like you're talking about like a
yeah,
bird
a
sitting
bird
on,
being on that, yeah, sitting on an egg. Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, I've never heard that phrase used elsewhere besides here. And even looking it up, I couldn't find. I mean, on the Urban Dictionary, it gave me something completely different. But I've also always been warned to never look at the Urban Dictionary because it will give you.
What is it now? I gotta know. What
It
does the
says
Urban
it's an
Dictionary say?
immature boy who has sudden access to easy sex. And as a result, stops concentrating on his job or study or friends or anything else.
Wow.
Or it could mean someone who is mildly stoned 24/7.
That's new to me.
Yeah,
That's
me
have
too.
not heard that usage.
I've never heard either of those usages before. So, maybe what he's saying is that Mary, you've been stoned. What are you
Are
doing
you
with that pot, Mary?
tripping? Mary,
There
you
you go.
tripping?
It could be that's what he said. It's actually very possible that that's what he's saying. It would make sense. So, and he's starting to understand what's really going on here. And she goes, "George Bailey lassos stork." And he goes, "Lassos a stork? You mean you?" So you see, he didn't get it until now. He still wasn't sure.
That's one of like the most awkward line readings in the whole movie. George Bailey Lasso Stork. I don't know
Yeah.
why it just.
Yeah. Why do you think people associate storks with babies? Do you have any idea?
I don't know where that. It's some kind of like fairy tale or something, but I'm not sure where that came from.
Right. So there's an ancient legend of European folklore that the white stork is responsible for bringing babies to new parents. In the 19th century, Hans Christian Andersen wrote a story called The Storks, which helped popularize this idea. There are German legends that say that storks find babies in caves or marshes and bring them to households in a basket, being held in their beaks. And the babies would then be given to the mother or dropped down the chimney. And if they were interested in having children, they would put like candy on the windowsill so that the stork would know. It's just
We
a
didn't see any candy on the windowsill here in the bedroom.
no, not at all. Well, because it's the middle of the night. Someone already ate it.
Okay.
Yeah, again, it's, there People say that the stork fable became popular because people just didn't want to discuss sex and procreation with their children, so they just said, "Hey, well, okay, we'll adopt this idea." Yeah, the stork is gonna bring a baby. Which I always find very funny that that's what people, you see in cartoons and things like that where, the storks are flying and they're, they have diaper, they're holding the baby by the diaper, in their beak and stuff like that. So yeah, that's why here's something very interesting. In medieval England, storks were associated with adultery. I don't really know how that fits in there. It's like, okay, if a if
Adultery
a
by, is it adultery by the man or the woman?
it doesn't say.
Because I know, like, there's, the people say, like, when the woman commits adultery, there's, like, the man wears cuckold's horns.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't say. It just says that. It just says here that storks were associated with adultery, possibly inspired by their courtship rituals. Because I think the bird itself is not necessarily a bird that mate
For
forever.
life or
Yeah,
anything? Okay.
they're considered serial
There's like a
monogamous.
mating dance. Okay.
Yeah, they after various migrations they change mates, all the time. So yeah, I guess that's maybe that's part of it. It's the idea that okay, you're like a stork, you just keep changing your mate along the way.
Okay, that
Don't know.
works.
Okay. And then George was, you mean you, what is it, a boy or a girl? I guess George didn't know about ultrasound at the time, So.
Well, I don't know. When did ultrasound become a thing?
Yeah, I don't know, but well, let's put it this way. I know that I was born in the early 70s and they were not using ultrasound at the time. Because my mother did not know she was having twins because they didn't do an ultrasound.
Same with me.
Oh wow. There you go.
My brother was born, and the doctor said, "This one's not big enough.
Oh, okay. So
You got another one in there."
that's right. My sister was born and then they're like, "Hey, there's another one." So yeah, wow, that's really cool that we both have that in common. And then Mary emphatically shakes her head yes and goes, meaning, which I would imply that means she's having twins.
That's kind of a leap, I think.
Well, a boy or girl, and she goes, yes. It also makes me start to wonder if George really understands how babies are born.
Do you think they were trying to get pregnant around this time?
My assumption is no, because he
Okay.
seems really, really shocked that this is a possibility. Maybe he's just coming home really late, and that's why it's less of a possibility. She's always fast asleep when he gets home. So I don't know.
You don't know, huh? Okay.
And then this we get the famous scene swipe. Between scenes.
So we before we leave Donna Reed,
Okay.
you have any other favorite Donna Reed performances?
Well, this is my favorite. There's no question about that because I think she's perfect as Mary here.
Yeah.
I cannot think of something that she does better. I know she had the Donna Reed show, and I'm sure that I've seen her in other
Yeah, she
movies.
had the Donna Reed. I
I'm
love her performance as a prostitute in From Here to Eternity. Not just because that's just kind of so against type, but I think that is a really good performance. There's a couple scenes that she has with Montgomery Clift that are very, they're very emotionally charged, and
interesting.
she does, it's a fantastic performance in that one.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing her in it, and if I remember correctly, she was nominated for an Oscar for her work there. Partially because
Makes sense.
it's very different from what everyone is used to seeing her, you know, in that type of role. That is she actually won an Oscar for it. Wow, what do you know? Not only was she nominated, this was the only time she was nominated, and she won an Oscar for best supporting actress.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I like that also, but I still think she does a better job here, because it's a role that you can really like, you know. She's a very likable character here in this movie. She's not as likable in From Here to Eternity, unless you're willing to pay enough for it, you know, that type of thing. But
well, she's very like at there's that scene where she tries to convince Montgomery Clift like not to go back to his unit,
right?
Because he's been hiding out like at her place, and she's like, it's just eruption of emotion where she screams at him. You're a 20-year man. She says it like derisively. That's like, and then at the end of the picture where she's telling lies about her boyfriend to like the other woman she meets on the boat. Like it's a very kind of mini layered, kind of very self-deceptive character, which is great. But this, not to take away, I agree with you. This performance is, I mean, we already talked about how, you know, she can be looked at as the ultimate protagonist of the movie. And it's she's very likable in this movie, as you said, and there's a lot of subtlety in the way she plays, and you can see the meaning behind a lot of the looks and the gestures she has and the reactions. So this is a performance that, I mean, this movie is so watchable, and you can go over it again and again, and you can keep finding new things to like about her performance here.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Completely. Right. Okay. So, and then we have the perfect scene swipe here. And then we were back to a voiceover. We hear Joseph, you know, giving a nice continuation of an explanation to Clarence as to what's going on. He goes, "Now you've probably already guessed that George never leaves Bedford Falls." Clarence says, "No. Mary had her baby, a boy. Then she had another one, a girl. Day after day, she worked away remaking the old Granville house." So, first of all, I like the way how they're truncating, I guess, about 12 years into a short description. You know, I mean, we'll get more into it next week when we discuss it all. But
yeah, this is kind of the training montage.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly what it is.
This is like, instead of Mr. T like putting duct tape on like a machine gun, right? This is getting ready for the big montage.
Here's they're just missing the background
Mary
music.
Hatch.
Dun 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 dun. Yeah, for all those not for all those who don't
together.
Understand what we're talking about, it's the 18. Yeah. So. But yeah, it's a great montage. It's great. First of all, they show us, you know, everything that's being talked about. They show us very briefly. You know, we see when he says George stays in Bedford Falls, we see him, you know, walking to work, not necessarily happy, but still going to the office. Then we see a baby, you know, in a hospital, the baby's crying, and then we see Mary dealing with one baby and then a toddler in a crib at the same time. And then we see her, you know, just working in the house, and she's wallpapering, you know, the room.
She's painting the window frames.
That's right. Yeah. And it goes back to what we were talking about, you know, earlier this week, how you can see the water damage that she's covering over. So she really is turning this place into a livable house, you know, and this was her plan the whole way through. So I like the way that they're, you know, that they're very quickly showing us this stuff, but it seeps in because it's telling us, okay, this is who Mary is. Mary wants to make a home for her and George here. And for the two
She's
kids.
putting in the work.
That's
Yeah.
right.
She's making the plan and she's putting in the work.
Well, because she doesn't have to go work in the library because she's married. You know,
That's right. Yeah.
that's what this movie is saying. If you have a husband like George Bailey who's making $45 a week,
You're not an old maid.
that's
Yeah.
right, and you don't need, and you can stay home and fix up the place, you know, over the period of years. I mean, think about it. Let's say this baby, the first baby is two or three. So she's putting up wallpaper like 3 years after she tells George that she's pregnant. You know, it took her a little bit of time to get that done. But again,
There's
it's done
a
very nicely.
lot of there's when she's painting the window frame, there's like a lot of stuff on the table. She's got turpentine,
That's right.
she's got paint, and then she's got like a whole other like smaller jars or canisters or I don't know what those are.
They look like little potions. And one of them looks like maybe a whiskey bottle. You know, she needs to take a couple swigs of whiskey as she's doing all this work.
Potions Kiki's mom at the beginning of Kiki's Delivery
There you
Service.
go.
She has her
Exactly.
little potion room.
There you go. That makes sense. And it looks like there's a bucket being used as a lampshade.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look like a typical lampshade.
No.
But again, it you know,
Yeah, again, it's.
just in these few seconds, it tells us so much about the life of George and Mary. And I just love the way they
I
do it.
love the yeah, I love their her like cap too.
Yeah. Well,
Like
the
a
cap
little
actually
baseball
reminds me.
cap or kind of.
It reminds me the way she wears the cap is what you see in A League of Their Own. You know, a shout out to Tierney.
Yes.
You know, that's what May would wear, you know. That's Madonna's hat in the movie.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, that's very cool. And people are gonna have to come back next week to hear more about what Joseph gives as narration in order to let time go by a lot quicker. All right. So, Richard, do you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
No, nothing earth-shattering.
Okay.
Good.
Okay, that's fair. So every Friday I have a segment called Oscar Oops. The idea behind it is we've had Oscars for the past 95 years. There's always a lot of controversy as to whether the Oscars made the right choice or didn't make the right choice. You know, everyone has their own opinions as to which movies deserve to win that didn't win. And so the idea here is to let my guests tell me their opinions on that. Like, what are the top five movies that they think should have won that didn't win? And obviously, you know, it needs to be something that was nominated for Best Picture that year. So unfortunately, Akira cannot be one of your five.
No.
Actually, none of your Ghibli movies can.
No.
Sorry.
All right. Number five is from 2014, Boyhood, which was beat by Birdman. I did not care for Birdman. Really, I don't think that's a very, very good film. But Boyhood, I think it's a unique film. It's something I don't think that anybody has done before or since, filming doing a film over so many years, tracing,
That wasn't a
using the same
documentary.
actor.
That's the thing. You know, you have
That
Seven Up,
wasn't a
right? You have Seven
documentary.
Up and
Yeah.
all that stuff, which I've
Correct.
always
Yeah,
enjoyed,
very good point.
you know.
Yeah. I was actually saw like some of the behind the scenes or some of like the extra footage or extra features, like some of like the cast interviews, or the interview panels, that were like on the extras in the DVD, which some of which are like maybe better than the movie, because there was Patricia Arquette. She talked about when she saw the premiere, and she saw the scene. There's one scene where the boy is like in this like abandoned house with a bunch of his friends, and they're like throwing like saw blades like at a board or something, or so doing something else kind of like a little bit sketchy, and maybe like sipping beer. And she hadn't seen that. She had like no idea that that scene had been filmed. She hadn't seen anything, and she got like angry at his character. It was like, as like a mother, she was so angry that he had done something so dangerous and hadn't told her about it.
Oh wow, that's very cool.
It's something, I don't know if it's like has like an impact that maybe you would expect, but it's like I said, it's something, you know, nobody else has done as a dramatic presentation. And it's something I still think about every once in a while. So a very good film. Number four, 2017. Get Out, I think, should have won instead of The Shape of Water. Remember people at the time when the Shape of Water won were like people who hadn't seen it or something. Why does Hollywood like this? Is there some random scene in there where there's like somebody about the magic of cinema? And it turns out, yes, there is. It just kind of goes to show, like, you know, what a navel-gazing group of people the Academy is. But anyway, so that's number four. Number three, so 1939, The Wizard of Oz, I think, should have won over Gone with the Wind, especially looking back 84 years later. I think it's, not only is it like a better film, like a better kind of with a better message, it just has more impact and more staying power, I think, than the other one.
Right. Well, I mean, that's always one of the problems with you know, looking at movies 80 years later. You get more of an idea as to what really was going on.
Yeah.
Than the perspective that people have at the moment.
Which I think is a big Yeah, a big part of my next choice, number two, 1990. You can kind of see, like, politically how Dances with Wolves, especially with its, I appreciate its use of the actual Native American language in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that was something that was really talked about, and it's, you know, very good for representation. But Goodfellas was a much better movie, just all around. It probably should have gotten the Oscar. And then number one, 1941, I'm sure probably other people have brought this up. Who remembers How Green Was My Valley? Who even remembers what that movie
Fraser Crane. Fraser Crane. Fraser Crane.
Okay. But you had, not only did you have Citizen Kane that year, but The Maltese Falcon was also nominated. I probably would have given the award to Citizen Kane. But The Maltese Falcon, I think, is a perfect film, and that is a movie that I watch probably once a year and can never
get tired. Which of them is getting the points? Do I give it to Citizen Kane or give it to Maltese
Falcon? I think you give it to Citizen Kane.
Okay.
Are you tabulating points, or are you going to, like, at the end of the season have, like,
okay. Of course. I don't do these things randomly. Come on. There's a method to this, man. Okay, great. Thank you very much for that list. I appreciate that. Would you like to, one last time this week, tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, you can go to my website, dunhamrc.com. That has links to my two podcasts, Akita Minute. You can also find at akitaminute.com, where my co-host Jack Stoll and I talk about the 1988 blockbuster anime classic Akita, 1 minute at a time. And my other podcast, Ghibli Minute, which you can find at ghibliminute.com, where my daughter and I talk about what is it? Nausicaa, Laputa, Totoro, Grave of the Fireflies, and then about half of Kiki's Delivery Service. So 4.5 Ghibli movies, minute by minute, or let's see, what do we say? 1 minute at a time, or minute by minute is another way to say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Richard, thank you very much for joining me this week. I had a great discussion with you. I think we pointed out some really nice things that happened here. So thank you for taking the time to join me.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And I will be back on Monday. But until then, everyone should have a great weekend. And until Monday, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.